Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
You are listening to Troubadours and Raconteurs with E.W. Conundrum Demure on Radio Free Brooklyn. Welcome to episode 265 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we have our regular contributor, resident philosopher, farmer, and winemaker, among other things, Almighty Todd. And we talk with Almighty Todd about consumption, and that leads to all kinds of good places of discourse. We also have an EW essay by yours truly called Tell Dad, a little Dr. Seuss, Hop on Pop, and a poem titled April Kiss. And all of this will include, for sure, several great tunes. Thanks for being with us. Let's get to it. Episode 265 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Thank you.
tell Dad. I talk with people quite often. I enjoy talking with people. In the process of talking with, which involves a lot of listening, I have come to understand a prevailing context from which many, if not most, are deeply rooted in their consciousness. It is hierarchical in structure and overly emotional, immature with regard to what are very often called desired outcomes. We are governed by a desire for approval from those we deem to be in roles of authority, from our peers, and from those we love. This observation might seem so obvious that it sounds silly to mention. I disagree. This proclivity for approval in us leads us away from independence and trailblazing. Instead, we are more prone to abide by what ways are deemed majority normal. Go along to get along. Don't get reprimanded, isolated, arrested, or worse. Get the clan's acceptance. Get material rewards and suppress your urge for more, for other. Ignore it. Stay away from it. Stay away from yourself. We consume these messages through our immersion in human mass culture, which is becoming more streamlined and connected at levels of seeming omniscience as never before experienced, and at such a fast rate of conformity. What good can come from this, I wonder? Look, I think that might be a gender-neutral, queer, anti-growth, vegan, atheist pirate. Tell Dad.
Could have been a sailor, could have been a cook. A real life lover, could have been a book. I could have been a signpost, could have been a clock. As simple as a kettle, steady as a rock. I could be here and now. I would be, I should be, but how? I could have been one of these things first. I could have been been your dog. I could have stayed beside you, could have stayed for more. I could have been your statue, could have been your friend. A whole long lifetime could have been the end. Could be oh so true. I would be, I should be through and through. I could have been one of these things first. I could have been. One of these things first. whistle caught up in a flute. A real life giver could have been a boot. I could have been a signpost, could have been a clock. As simple as a kettle, steady as a rock. I could be even here. I would be, I should be, somewhere. I could have been. But one of these things first. I could have been. But one of these things first.
Almighty Todd, is that you?
Hey, Mr. Conundrum, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. It seems like it wasn't so long ago that we talked.
I know, but the winter's passing into spring. I can tell it's been a while just by the amount of snow that we don't have anymore here.
Yeah,
in the valley.
I'm so happy, and thankfully, I'm so happy about it. I mean, I like winter, but it's starting to get to me.
Get tired of shoveling?
Shoveling and just, you know, being inside so much. And that's the shoveling so much. I think the lack of sunshine and such.
Yeah.
You know, it affects me. It affects me. It affects, you know, weather affects us.
You need the sunshine. It's one of the things you've got to consume.
That's right. Right, exactly. And beautiful segue. We're going to talk about consumption. Thank you for serving that one up. we're going to talk to Almighty Todd, our resident philosopher here on Troubadours and Rock on Tours, also a farmer and a winemaker, giving him a call at his place in Stockbridge, Vermont. He's exclusively, I have him to a long-term contract on Troubadours and Rock on Tours, and we are going to talk today about how what we consume physically, intellectually, visually, and otherwise affects us, how we interact with the world, how we view the world, and so on. So let's get started. Do you believe, Almighty Todd, that what we consume physically influences our behavior?
I'd say you can't help but do that. And maybe we're still working on the direct pathways, but certainly in indirect ways, the influence is grand. I would say, as someone who has kind of been a long-term student of nutrition and physical fitness and, you know, in working in my own training and working with other people, to see the differences in what you put in your body to fuel it and build it. Because, I mean, this is the amazing thing about the sensory world. And in, you know, just consumption of our reality in general, but that, you know, our visual plane of existence, we're actually taking, you know, reflected light waves and interpreting them into our, you know, a three-dimensional representation of our external reality. And
right,
when we hear stuff, we're taking vibrations in, again, another energy wave in and interpreting it and building some understanding of our world with that. With touch, you know, you're kind of, it's a tactile, one of my senseis calls it the skin, the original brain.
Mm.
In evolution, that there's a just a way to apprehend the world through touch if you allow yourself to be sensitive enough. But with smell, which is a really powerful one, we actually interpret molecules from out in the world. we take molecules into our body. They stick in our nose, which is why we have to blow it every once in a while. but they stick in our nose, and our body maps to our brain a recognition of that molecule, not just about what it, quote unquote, smells like, but a whole bunch of other sensory stuff gets packaged with it, which is why a smell can send you back to your grandmother's kitchen when you were just a little kid. That kind of potency.
Mm-hmm.
So then with taste, the other sense, it's not just a sense, that's the pie hole through which we actually take matter from outside of the world, in the world, and process it, not just to fuel us with calories, but we actually build the very structure of our body out of that stuff. You know, what goes in there, some of that is replacing atomic and molecular structures inside your body. And waste, you know, stuff that doesn't work in your body anymore is being sent out. So the what we eat is fundamentally the fabric of our physical existence. So, you know, on a grand scale, it's like it has to have an effect beyond what we can even understand and probably don't pay enough attention to. But, you know, I just from today, I've been eating, I eat pretty well, I exercise, but every once in a while, you know, I didn't bring enough for lunch today and I had to run an errand. And I was like, I don't really need more, you know, another lunch or more food. So I just grabbed a package of peanut butter cups. You know, guilty pleasure. I love them. You know, there's something about them. It hit me today that they're still too sweet for me. And it was after I got like this, I don't know, about 8 minutes later, 10 minutes later, this rush where I was just like, ooh, I'm a little bit lightheaded all of a sudden. And it, you know, it took a minute or so for what really felt like that, I mean, that stuff hits your stomach. It's pure sugar. It, you know, it's not even getting to your large intestine. It's, you know, it's being processed right there. Some of it's, you know, it gets used up early in the system, so it makes it into the bloodstream pretty quick. And I was like, wow. Like, but I don't have a lot of that stuff, so it's, you know, I guess I could be sensitive to it for not eating it regularly, but if I did, you know, I can't imagine what my system would be like if I was fueling it on that a good portion of the time.
Yeah, it would not be as good as, you know, I'm pretty certain it is, given, you know, how healthy you do eat most of the time. And the taste, too. I think the more you eat the real salty and sugary stuff, you're not so sensitive to it as it seems you were eating that peanut butter cup.
Right.
You know, you're like, wow.
Well, because it's such an overload,
right?
Of what our system is really, really built for. And the thing is, though, with the sugar, you get like there's like a little dopamine hit that comes down too, and so that kind of factors into all of our consumption. And you know, are we really consuming because we want to, or because we're kind of at the behest of, you know, part of the monkey brain?
I think I'm totally ruled by my monkey brain. It's getting out of hand. To be honest with you, yeah, I hear you speak about how affected we are by what we consume, and I like the way you kind of broaden the ideas that can be associated with consume when you were talking about taking in visual and audio and touch. Consuming and processing those stimuli. Wonderful. I love it. But yeah, the food in particular, you know, after a while, and I think our society is gears itself to get us almost trapped in the web of consumption.
Yeah.
Bad consumption. Slave-like consumption.
Well, consumption in general is the biggest part of our GDP.
Gross domestic product.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, which is why, you know, they tell you when they want you to go out and buy stuff.
Well, yeah, and well, you go to someone who's a vegan, for example. You know, most of the time, people that I know, at least in articles I've read, that come from a vegan perspective, it's not just about physical health, though it is. It's also, you know, about mental health, spiritual health. You know, often the belief is that if you eat bad foods, in particular meat, you are going to have, it's going to have in their view, a negative influence on your whole outlook, your being.
Well, and that's if you're thinking about where it's coming from and how it's being handled, and you know, some people say you can't trust where it's coming from, so you can't be involved in that particular part of the food stream.
Well, not just that. Also, I think definitely. I mean, psychologically, in terms of, you know, your ethical, moral concerns. But I also have read and have heard firsthand vegans saying that they believe it messes with your chemical makeup when you eat meat. It makes you more aggressive, perhaps. It is not a calming sort of experience or influence on an individual.
Well, you know, and that's the particular point on an individual, because I really do think that all of us have very different body chemistries and makeups and how our metabolics work, and so it really has to be a case by case basis. I can't get on with the blanket that it's the same for everybody, because I've eaten in a bunch of different ways through my life, and what I'm right at now is kind of like a healthy, what I think is a healthy diet, but it's a broad diet, and with, you know, it's got a lot of grains and vegetables, has some meat, fish when you can afford it, and then, you know, lesser of the things that are at the top of the pyramid, like the, you know, too much salt and sweet and fat. Although I do lean a little bit more into the fat, and I have seen some research recently that really we may have been underdoing the amount of fat, because it's a really, especially when people are young, because it's a really critical component in building up the nervous system, the sheathing of the neurons.
And right.
So too little fat is not a good thing. And I know somebody who's a bako-vegan up here. Who?
What is what kind of clarification is that?
She's really vegan, but she has to eat bacon.
Oh,
if there's bacon around. you know, it's like everybody's got to figure out for themselves what works for them. But I think the thing is, those are, you know, any of those systems of thought about eating are really, they should be guidelines, but it's the point is of any of them, or that looking at a few of them, is that it gets you to be us to be more conscious about our patterns of consumption, so that we're more making choices than having things put in front of us, or letting ourselves be put in positions where we don't have a lot of choice and we're kind of served up whatever's near at hand. Really being conscious about that process of what it is that we're putting into our body. So, I was introduced to macrobiotics a long time ago. And it's from a extension of basically of Eastern medicine, and because diet is a big portion of how they deal with ailments there. You know, a lot of it is done through diet and herbal medicine, with then acupuncture and surgery being the very last, you know, resort.
Are you talking in China?
Yeah, generally in Eastern
Asia.
Yeah.
Eastern Asia.
Yeah, in traditional medicine cultures that I think blend pretty well with the Western medicine from the people's experiences that I've spoken to. But anyways, sliding off on a tangent there, the thing is we don't spend enough time being conscious about this process. And I think this is where it lines up with that. You know, there's the food pyramid of how you should eat, and I think that even that's being revamped right now. It's just as a concept that there's certain stuff that should be the broad base of your diet and support the majority of it, and then other supporting factors, and then there's stuff that you probably shouldn't eat so much of, and then there's stuff that you really should just make it be a treat, like candy.
Like the peanut butter cups you were talking
right.
about.
Like, you know, maybe that shouldn't be, you know, the everyday treat. or even once a week, for all I know. Maybe it is only the once a week treat, as opposed to a couple days during the week. But you know, as a choice, because it's how we engage in the world. You know, we only have so much time to be here, and so we want to, you know, make all the quality of it be good, not just, well, you know, chow down the sandwich, you know, without thinking about it, so I can get to go do something else. There's kind of a privilege, frankly, given how many people don't have access to food on this planet, to actually being able to sit down and eat something.
Well, don't you think, though, people truly enjoy sitting down and having a cheesesteak fries and gravy?
The cafe in town where I go and grab lunch, they have a cheesesteak special with fries on the side.
Right.
And I love that thing. But I have to say, I only do it like once every 2 weeks now.
Well, yeah. Metabolically, it's probably difficult, especially as you get older. And if you're not used to it, you know, it's hard to metabolize that. It's hard to digest that.
Yeah, or you start eating, you know, about the same amount during the day, but in smaller, you know, smaller bunches. Smaller munches, I mean. And again, it comes down to finding out what works for each of us, and then realize that that's also an arc of change, and being able
as
to,
you age,
as
you
we age, yeah, or as we grow older, if you're a really young person.
Now, let me ask you about consumption intellectually and visually. We're talking about, you know, food, and you also talked about stimuli that comes to our eyes, ears, nose, and skin. Now, what about our intellectually, visually, you know, how what we see and hear and allow ourselves to take in affects our outlook, our behavior in day-to-day?
Well, that was another interesting thing, because when it was – again, back to the macrobiotics, it was many years ago when I was introduced to that. It was in a period of kind of Eastern thought studies, and this idea of that you are what you consume was meant to be ascribed in all levels. And you know, in that time, you're not so much worried about the internet at that point. It was mostly movies, television, books, radio, in terms of the ways that you could absorb information from the world, which, you know, now we're starting to talk about that more as like something we have to deal with as a reality because of the way the information comes at us.
Smartphones and such, yeah.
Yeah, hang on, I gotta check mine right now.
You are listening to Troubadours and Raconteurs with E.W. Conundrum Demure on Radio Free Brooklyn.
No, sorry, no.
Did you get that tweet you were hoping to get?
You know, no, I'm blocked.
the real Donald Trump blocked you.
No. So a few weeks ago I came across this really cool image of a suggested media diet, and it does the same thing as the pyramid for the food pyramid. And it really was pretty cool because at the bottom it had stuff like reading books, having chats with real people, taking in art, theater, you know, going outside, you know, being in the real world as the most.
Yeah.
And then it said, then after that, you can spend, you know, like your next band, they suggest 3 hours, because that's actualization type stuff that's going on. It's very much here now. So then there's edification. So they ascribed you could spend 3 hours on edification, which was hobbies, reading nonfiction, reading good quality journalism, which is part of it, because that's like, what is real quality journalism? It means you're reading a wide array of high quality production. So then they say maybe 2 hours of something that's participatory, doing like shows or movies that you really want to watch, playing games, making a choice about what it is that you're consuming.
Mm-hmm.
Another one on maybe another hour on interaction, which is kind of like chats, you know, comments on comment boards below articles, you know, email chains, things like that. And then consumption. They're saying that you should probably be a little bit more careful here and spend less time a day on kind of the Facebook, CNN, Twitter, New York Post, YouTube, which is kind of a heavy social media driven and kind of rolling news consumption. Because you're constrained really in what's being put in front of you. You're not making a choice. You know, when we know, everybody knows now that the Facebook algorithm doesn't necessarily, it feeds you what it thinks it ought to feed you for purposes that it may not be in our own best interest. So, and you're definitely not seeing everything that's going on. You really got to like go and look up the people that you're interested in order to see what's going on there, because you're not getting all the news from them. So you have to work a little bit harder if you're on that platform to really make choices versus having stuff that's dropped in front of you. And then they really say that stuff that's bad for you is stuff that's kind of info toxic, like reading the tabloids, essentially.
Right, right.
Stuff that just really is not going to do anything useful for you, and if anything, is maybe killing your brain cells.
Yeah, but that's the real salty, that's the real sugary stuff, you know?
Exactly. The stuff that's really tempting, because we get that dopamine drop from it, even though it's not necessarily good for us.
And it's easy. You don't have to go and
click. Immediate.
It's immediate. It's not like when you're cooking a great meal, you have to buy fresh vegetables and clean them, you know, wash them, prepare them. It takes time. Where the salty, sweet stuff, you just drive through, throw down a couple bucks, grab it, unwrap it, suck it down your gullet. that's the problem, I think. You know, and we are, you mentioned our monkey brains, you know, that maybe are driving us too much when it comes to following those impulses. You know, early on, you know, we were less developed as a species, and we're more apt to be more impulsive. Hopefully we've evolved, but are we getting to a point now where we're devolving or morphing into something that's not so healthy? And how do we break away from this? It's the mass culture, you know, it's entrenched to a great extent, especially where we live here in the United States of America. How do we break away from these nefarious ways?
Yeah, I hear you, and I think we are evolving to a certain degree, but like physically, we're still a much older creature than the world we've built up around us. So we're, in a way, we're already living in a sort of virtual reality or an enhanced reality, because some of the realities that we did evolve under over a very long period of time, this is provided that you believe that we've evolved and that we have the potential to evolve, but that the framework around us is a lot different. So we're kind of, the brain is using more of its capacity in different ways now than it was evolved for, but that part is adapting to this social construct that we're building up around us. But the body is still pretty much this, you know, a lot of the same equipment that we've had for quite a long time, like tens of hundreds of thousands of years. So the thing is, that's the challenge, is that our world is kind of getting out of sync with where we are, and we need to figure out how to navigate it in a way that keeps us, you know, mentally and spiritually healthy as well as physically healthy in the real world, because we still have to navigate it. It's hard to be crossing the street and be thinking about something else that you're supposed to be doing and realize you're about to not, you know, get hit by a bus because you're just not there.
So you're saying keeping in touch with reality, you know, but sort of in your sense of where and how you want to develop as a person, it needs to be more progressive. But sometimes those progressive ideas that you're pursuing in terms of behavior, choices in the way you exist day to day, intellectual, spiritual, moral-based, ethical choices, those are sort of ideals. Maybe also not that easy to attain. You can't avoid the traffic of everyday reality now.
No, but you again, we can choose how we're interacting with it. And there was a great interview I heard with a woman who wrote a book called How to Break Up with Your Cell Phone. And you heard about this?
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Price was her name. And helping people to think about reframing about it, you know, it's not that you are really breaking up with the cell phone. You just want to reestablish how the relationship is with it so that you're spending more time on your life than in the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we know this is a problem, because again, the phone, you know, gives us, every time you hear a bing or whatever, you know, you have a text, or you just won, you know, 40,000 coins on, I don't know. I don't play any of the games, so I don't even have an example.
But it's Pavlovian.
So it's there to pull us in. So she came up with some things to think about it. You know, you're spending more time in your life if you're not spending your time on the phone, and give yourself the permission to say, you know, what do you want to pay attention to? And you know, you can create triggers. One of the things was a speed bump, where you put a rubber band around the phone, or put an interesting lock screen on it. You know, lock screen image that'll make you stop for a moment and say, okay, do I need to do this right now?
Right.
Or another thing is, and this is something I've been doing for years now since I've had a smartphone, is to pay attention to my body when I'm using it, because it's real easy when you're holding your phone to end up crouching over and leaning, hunching over the phone. You see it people all the time. And so I tend to, if I'm really going to be on it for a while, I've found a way where I can put my elbows on my chest, bring them in, and hold the phone up in front of my face, but I'm not giving up my posture at all.
Why is that important?
Because I sit at a desk for a lot of the time already, which is a posture challenge, and you know, for the arts that I practice, I want to stay fit, and that kind of, basically, it's not even repetitive use, it's non-use postural fixation creates all kinds of muscle problem, you know, muscle spastic problems and fascial buildup, and puts pressure on bones in the way that they aren't really supposed to be working.
Using our smartphone is going to screw us up physically as well.
Oh yeah, I'm willing to bet that chiropractors intellectually and physical therapists, you know, are going to be making bank on this for generations until the next
development.
Development, which I wanted to bring up, is virtual reality.
Right.
I heard a guy who's an expert in VR and does, you know, develops in it and studies it quite a bit. He's got a young kid who he's shown it to, but only for very short periods of time under supervision and on something like a riding on a swing or a monkey bar. It was like really simple, safe, because, you know, putting that headset on, I haven't done it yet. I haven't had the opportunity. But I'm going to make the conscious choice about when I'm going to do that. But I'm not planning on getting one for the house anytime soon. But it's a very, very strong visceral reaction of presence.
Oh my God!
Another space that, you know, if they put you on the log over the abyss, you are going to be like, whoa, okay, and you know.
We'll be a bunch of pods. We'll just be sitting around with these things on our heads.
Yeah, well, they
are not moving.
Yeah, well, they suck the energy off of you and the
hook you up to
like
an
the
IV.
Matrix. Yeah,
right, exactly.
So, well, but the point is that it's also potentially a very compelling space to be in, even more so than the phone is. And so, you know, we may be in a position where a truly alternate reality is the reality that's shaping our brain.
That's some heavy stuff there. I don't know if we have enough time to continue with it here. You got me depressed a little bit about where we're going regarding consumption.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. So, do you have any suggestions for the listeners as to, you know, how we can consume in a healthier manner overall? In a little snippet of insight.
You got to want to do it. You want to be able to say that that's part of your independence as a free person, as a free being, is to be able to make the choice to live a more conscious life about what it is that builds our life. Whether it be the food we put in our mouth, the people that we listen to, the things that we watch. This is our one chance to do this. So, you know, just be sure you know what you're going to eat next.
When you say to do this, you mean this thing called life?
Called life. That's it, you know.
Well, thanks again, our resident philosopher, Almighty Todd. It's always a pleasure talking with you, and I look forward to seeing you. I'll be seeing you in a couple of weeks. You're coming down to visit.
Oh, yes, that's right. I will be coming through, and I'm looking forward to seeing you, too, and I'll have a couple of bottles of wine for you, I think.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. I look forward to it.
All right, take care, brother.
You too, brother. Dr. Seuss, a.k.a. Theodore Geisel, Hop on Pop. Up, pup, pup is up. Cup, pup, pup in cup. Pup, cup, cup on pup. Mouse, house, mouse on house. House, mouse, house on mouse. All tall, we all are tall. All small, we all are small. All ball, we all play ball. Ball, wall, up on a wall. All fall, fall off the wall. Day, play, we play all day. Night, fight, we fight all night. He, me, he is after me. Him, Jim, Jim is after him. C, B, we see a B. C, B, three, now we see three. Three, tree, three fish in a tree. Fish in a tree, how can that be?
Red, red. They call me red, red bed. I am in bed. Red Ned Ted and Ed in bed. Oh, what dread to those who hate the gays. Pat, Pat, they call him Pat. Pat sat on hat. Pat cat, Pat sat on cat. Pat bat, Pat sat on bat. No, Pat, no, don't sit on that. Cactus. Sad, dad, bad, had. Dad is sad, very, very sad. He had a bad day. What a day Dad had! Thing, thing. What is that thing? Thing, sing. That thing can sing. Song, long. A long, long song. Goodbye, thing. You sing too long. Walk, walk. We like to walk. Walk, talk. We like to talk. Hop, pop. We like to hop. We like to hop on top of pop. Stop. You must not hop on pop. Mr. Brown. Mrs. Brown. Mr. Brown upside down. Pup up. Brown down. Pup is down. Where is Brown? Where is Brown? There is Brown. Mr. Brown is out of town. Seesaw. Back, plaque. Brown came back. Brown came back with Mr. Black. Snack, snack, eat a snack. Eat a snack with Brown and Black. Jump, bump. He jumped, he bumped. Fast, past. He went past fast. Went, tent, sent. He went into the tent. I sent him out of the tent. He doesn't have his fair share of the rent. Wet, get. Two dogs get wet. Help, yelp. They yelp for help. Hill, will. Will went uphill. Will, hill, still. Will is uphill still. Father, mother, sister, brother. That one is my other brother. From another mother, perhaps. My brothers read a little bit. Little words like if and it. My father can read big words too, like Constantinople and Timbuktu. Say, say. What does this say? See, he, me, we, pat, pop, pop. He, three, tree, be, top, hop, stop. Ask me tomorrow, but not today.
treacherous road with a desolated view. Distant lights, hear their foreign view. The sun don't shine. All night just to feel like you're okay. Oh, these days barely get by. I don't even
April Kiss. Jelly beans in the front pocket of my tight jeans. I put my right hand deep down inside to gather a few for you. They are warm and a bit sticky. They smell almost as sweet as they taste in your mouth. I enjoy your tongue as it enjoys mine.
I don't want to be funny anymore. I don't want to be funny anymore. Lately I've been feeling like the odd man. I heard my friends saying things I don't mean out loud. I'll be the biggest fan.
And there you have it, episode 265 of Troubadours and Rock On Tours with yours truly, EW Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, our resident philosopher, Almighty Todd. I also like to thank Theodore Geisel, a.k.a. Dr. Seuss, and these wonderful musical artists, Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli, The Rolling Stones, Nick Drake, Wilco, Beck, Lucy Dacus, and Branford Marsalis, Terrence Blanchard, too. Thanks so much for listening. Until next week, enjoy this one.